James Carse has graced us with his presence and invited us into a beautiful space here in Western Massachusetts. Bill Russell, I, Paula Gordon. Bill had introduced Dr. Carse, this idea of 9/11 as poetry. That's pretty shocking.
Well, think of it this way. What those pirates did is create one of the most powerful visual images of all time. This will never be forgotten. It was, in that sense, a work of art that is so stunning that no Michelangelo even comes close to competing with. But because it was done within the context of a political necessity to strengthen a belief system, it becomes purely evil. And in a way that I think most people don't realize.
You use the word context, which is one of the big ideas that you approach in your elegant treatment in all kinds of things that become an open system in and of themselves in the religious case against belief. Context matters.
Oh, yes. Oh, my. Yes, of course.
Well, it's of course, but people, I think, can forget how much that which shapes us shapes us.
Yeah. Well, you know, the simple way to put it in terms of the issue of belief is that most people, I think of belief as an intellectual process. A little switch goes on in your mind. When as a matter of fact, belief only makes sense when it's in a very rich social context and literary context and poetic context and so on.
Are those the communitas as?
Well, I make a distinction between communitas and civitas in the book. It's not original with me, but it's an important distinction. Civitas is any social structure that's organized from the top down. Society, America, is in certain ways a function of top-down authority. On communitas, on the other hand, is from the bottom up. It comes spontaneously out of the human context. It's largely artistic. It has no particular logic or you know, the way people have dinner with each other. It doesn't have any kind of legal or civic meaning, but it has a huge communal meaning. So the very subtle business is to get civitas and communitas working compatibly with each other. One way to say that is that a very strong civitas, just take America, is one that would strongly encourage its poets.
If you will, take us to the person. Now, I confess, I'm from the land of Lincoln.
All right.
You talk about Lincoln and his second inaugural as being perhaps the most important document right up there with the Constitution, and Lincoln as our great poet.
Right. Well, what Lincoln said in the, I mean, it's so simple, that second inaugural. The point was that both sides worship and pray to the same God. This doesn't work. We both can't justify what we're doing to each other by reference to the authority of this God. And because it's God to whom we appeal, then it has the radical conclusion of saying there is no authority, finally, to whom we can appeal for our actions. This is a very great, you might even say existential document. I mean, it's an extraordinary piece of work. 701 words, almost all of them in single syllables. He delivered in a little less than 7 minutes. And the greatest document, I agree, you know, this, you're right. It's the second greatest document in American literature.
Do you invite me, as you make a religious case against belief, do you invite me into a lifetime that will end in death, that is a real thing, to be thinking about open systems rather than succumbing to a closed way of being?
Sure. I think that the existing religions, any one of them, all of them, have the capacity to open us to ongoing wonder. Just the simplest example, the Christian Eucharist, the Last Supper. If you just think a little bit about it, what in heaven's name, and I mean that seriously, is happening here? We are eating a God? What is this about? Well, it's important to remember that in Christian history, that notion has been extremely disruptive and controversial, never really settled, but always a source of wonder, marvel, puzzlement. And I think it's very useful to go to a good Christian service and sit there during the Eucharist and say to yourself, what is this about?
Take it. Bill, go ahead.
There seems to me, you don't say it, but it seems to me there is simply something startlingly Darwinian.
Oh.
In the evolution of religion, the ongoing of religion, not
sure.
Belief systems, that they are dynamic, they are responding to the local circumstances, they're asking old questions, getting new answers, but that there's an evolutionary component to this that I found remarkable.
Yeah, well, it's true. I accept the that description. But, you know, I would also remind everyone that religions also die. They don't always succeed.
As do species.
And it's like species, right. And a lot of religions have died. And some that have been around for longer than Christianity and Judaism. The Egyptian religion, for example, just vanished overnight with the Roman.
With Alexander.
I mean, with the Greek victory over the Egyptians. Yeah.
I would invite you to take us out with a sense of wonder. Wonder is where you conclude with this book, and it seems as if that is the way out of some of the constraints that we impose upon ourselves.
There is no point in our everyday existence at which we could not stop and be stunned by what's happening. Absolutely amazed that we exist even, and how easily we forget that. And I think one of the great services that religion does is to remind us, is to urge us at every moment to be stunned, to find the place marvelous, our existence, our own existence, and the world in which we find it.
You are a source of wonderment to me, James Carse.
Okay.
Keep up the wonderful work, and we will look forward to continuing this conversation.
I'd love it, sure.
The Religious Case Against Belief is as liberating as it is timely and timeless. We thank James Carse for refreshing the vitality of authentic religion, for his boundless creativity, and for his repeated hospitality. He sets a very high standard for living life to the fullest. I'm Paula Gordon. I wish you well.